Last week on Let's Talk Supply Chain, I was joined by Pam Simon for this month's episode of our Woman in Supply Chain series. Pam is an entrepreneur, content creator, experiential marketer, and angel investor. So it was a real pleasure to get to know her and chat about the many incredible strings to her bow. She lived in Brazil for a time where she produced the first demo day for an accelerator and the first entrepreneur week for the country. And when her Future of Event series was acquired by Connective, Manifest was born. We had so much to talk about, and I absolutely loved it. And I hope you did too. Pam shared some really inspirational advice as well. So if you missed it, you can catch up over on letstalksupplychain.com, on our YouTube channel, or anywhere else that you subscribe to the show. It was episode 399. Let's Talk Supply Chain is not your average supply chain podcast. We feature not just the top of the industry, but also diverse voices from within the community, new innovations, and the disruptors making waves in the industry. Don't listen to the same old, same old. Be sparked by new ideas and fresh perspectives only on Let's Talk Supply Chain.
Are you ready to find your people? If you're struggling to find a supply chain community of like-minded professionals where you can level up, network, learn about best practices from experts in supply chain, professional development, and marketing, look no further. We created the Secret Society of Supply Chain to provide a safe space, a community for everyone in supply chain. We offer unique opportunities for everyone to connect and grow in our three distinct value-packed communities, the Supply Chainers, Women in Supply Chain, and the Creative Room. From the learn at your own pace, content-rich approach of the Supply Chainers to the empowering community-focused space of Women in Supply Chain and the marketing mastermind of the Creative Room, we mean it when we say there's truly a place for everyone. When you join one of our communities, you'll gain access to a wealth of knowledge, resources, expertise, and my favorite part, opportunities to build genuine connections with like-minded professionals. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting out, you'll find a supportive and collaborative environment that fosters learning, connection, and long-term growth. Head over to secretsocietyofsupplychain.com to explore which community was made for you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Let's Talk Supply Chain. Before we start, here's a brain teaser for you. Today's guest ships between Canada and the US, but how long is the Toronto to Los Angeles lane? Well, it's going to be a long one, but how long exactly? Let me know your guesses over on social and keep listening because I'll let you know at the end of the show. So today I'm joined by the largest privately held Canadian cross-border LTL carrier. They're award-winning and are celebrating their 30th anniversary this year. But who are they? Well, I'll reveal it all after the question of the week. So the question we asked you, how do you prefer to consume books? Well, we had almost 400 votes on this one. 63%, a resounding amount of people said physical books always. 19% of you said audiobook, please. 15% of you said ebook enthusiast. Heather says, I love a physical copy, but for convenience, I frequently read on my phone or Kindle app or use my Kindle. Narisa, all of the above. Audrey O'Connor says, switch to Kindle in 2023 and I'm never going back to physical books. Audiobooks for the commute. Cheryl says, I think all books should come with a free ebook download if available when you buy the hard copy. I am someone who wants both. That's such a great idea. Rocio, I enjoy consuming books in various formats, whether it's through traditional reading, audiobooks, or ebooks. I'm with you, Rocio. And Jody says, I love feeling and smelling the pages and always love meeting up with my book club ladies to discuss the book. Jenny says, I actually read, consume a mix of all three. And I'm with you, Jenny. For me, physical books are best for the beach for me. Audiobooks I like to use when I'm wanting to read nonfiction. And ebooks are good for me when I'm reading fiction because I'm usually reading it at night before I go to bed. Well, thank you so much to everybody who weighed in on the question of the week. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, make sure to head back to Let's Talk Supply Chain LinkedIn and Instagram pages to be part of that conversation every single Wednesday morning. So now back to today's episode, and which long-standing transportation brand is joining me today? Well, it's Polaris Transportation Group. Over the years, Polaris has evolved to make life easier for the shipping community and through innovation and acquisition. Customers now look to Polaris to assist in all facets of their supply chain. A single source supply chain provider, Polaris is the carrier of choice for Fortune 500 companies, 3PLs, global freight forwarders, and small to medium-sized businesses alike. And it's Dave Cox, CEO at Polaris, that is joining me for the show today. And today, Dave and I will be talking all about Polaris, what they do, moving beyond a we've always done it that way approach. We all need to listen to that one. And how they're helping brands of all sizes to cross borders and why they're embarking on a unique digital transformation journey. So welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. I mean, another Canadian company on the show. You're family owned and operated as well. So I feel right at home with you. And I really do have a soft spot for family run businesses because I can see the passion. I can see how much you care about your customers, about your team. And it's especially good to see, you know, in what is a tough market at the moment. So let's find out more about Polaris. Do you want to start by giving us an introduction to yourself, to Polaris, what you do, and how you help your customers?
Perfect. Dave Cox, CEO of Polaris Transportation Group. We are the largest privately held cross-border carrier in Canada. We've been in business, it's actually our 30th year.
Wow, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. And the company was actually started by my father, Larry Cox, and my mother, Jerry Cox, in 1994. They were bankrupt at the time. They had been entrepreneurs before. So we started with very humble beginnings, constantly reinvesting in our business. And we found some success along the way. We skinned our knees a few times along the way, all of which, we've learned.
Yeah, as you do in logistics, I find, right? Logistics, 3PL, trucking, brokerage. I think we all have a few bruises. So talk to us about what Polaris actually does. Like, who are you? How do you help your customers?
Yeah. So essentially, we're known for our cross-border LTL service, very scheduled. Think of a Greyhound bus service.
Okay.
We've moved 6 million orders in 30 years cross-border to or from the United States. And we are primarily focused on Eastern Canada to the United States and USA to back to Eastern Canada. We offer warehousing, distribution, fulfillment services. We have our own third-party logistics. And interestingly enough, we created our own tech firm called North Star Digital in 2018. Mm-hmm. And the goal there was to digitize all the Polaris companies. So
amazing.
I've always been passionate about, I consider myself a servant to our customers. Mm-hmm. I always tried to be a little bit boutique. Listen to the customers, all the things that are maybe obvious, but I do it very intentionally. And then I also try to impress upon the great people at Polaris to be a servant to our customers.
Well, and it's really important. I mean, relationships in this business matter, right? Yeah. Customers need to feel like they're being taken care of. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that digital side of the business a little bit later on in the discussion, but let's focus on your client first. So you have worked with Fortune 500 companies, 3PLs, global freight forwarders, small to medium-sized businesses. So do you have an ideal client? Who is the ideal company or organization that you want to work with?
I say this often is that maybe it's because I am an entrepreneur. Obviously we value larger clients, medium-sized clients for obvious reasons, scalability. I have smaller clients that I truly hold in the same standard as a Fortune 500 company. And, because I think I put myself in their shoes, whatever they're manufacturing or distributing, and each order means something to their business. It affects their business and it's their reputation on the line. And it that can be said with any size business, but it's really more impactful for a smaller person. Mm-hmm. So I've got clients that have been with me for 30 years and that have grown over the time. And I have clients with 30 years that are maybe the same size, but again, they're making an impact to what they're manufacturing and distributing to their clients.
Yeah. So you really help all sorts of business from small, medium to enterprise, and you can help them in a variety of ways, but sort of meet them where they are.
Yes. Yeah. We're agile enough, nimble.
Yeah. That's super, super important. Now you said that you were founded back in 1994, and I believe you began as a regional freight brokerage in Toronto. And now I believe you're somewhat global. So you gave us a little bit of a taste of the history and the journey, because what you've done already is impressive. Can you talk to us about that expansion, like how you went from the regional freight brokerage into where you are right now? And how was that growth trajectory?
It's interesting. So we did start off as a 3PL, truly servicing Southwestern Ontario and Midwest USA, specifically Chicagoland. We added some assets around the same time as our inception. And again, it was just kind of like being a very boutique. My father had a vision. Again, he appreciated attention to detail with people he dealt with, and he wanted his business Polaris to follow suit. We didn't, as I mentioned before, my parents were bankrupt. We didn't have any money. There was no lines of credit here. Everything, it was simple, reinvest. And we were fortunate. I guess some people liked our services. They liked the fact that we listened to them. And that's, maybe that seems funny to say, but not enough people listen in the world. And we were good at doing so. Over the years, we were able to scale up by just attracting business, typically through word of mouth. We didn't have a sales team. Truly today, we have a very, very small sales team. Over the years, we added more lanes. We added more assets. We was probably three or four companies we acquired. So growth was inorganic with respect to that. We'd buy other regional carriers. But a lot of the growth came organically just through word of mouth and reputation, adding more, kind of offering our clients more tools in the toolbox, so to speak.
Amazing. Growing by word of mouth, that really goes to show who you are in the market, how you're valued in the market, and how your customers see you and see working with you as well. So kudos to you for that, because that is not easy. But I think part of that journey and that history that you've just shared with us is really about embracing change. And we've seen a lot of change across the industry. What is your perspective on where we are right now? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the priorities? What are some of the Polaris customers focusing on?
Thank you. Embracing change is kind of our DNA at Polaris. We've always tried to be progressive when it comes to technology, people, community, sustainability. I would say the biggest challenge is right now, I don't know if it's really a challenge or just a reshaping of global supply chain. We saw the disruption that obviously COVID-19 created. Mm-hmm. Globalization has been a thing for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a lot more nearshoring with businesses we deal with bringing their manufacturing back to North America. If you think of it, and we have more than 500 million people between Mexico, United States, and Canada. We have a relatively stable geopolitical environment. It's a massive market. I think what the disruption from COVID taught us is that we need to make sure that we don't have lack of product. Mm-hmm. We want to have goods available in short order, so to speak. So, Mexico is a thing for us. We don't do a whole lot of Mexican cargo right now, but we're working on that. We know that's a growing area. Mm-hmm. We see our American clientele that want to access the Canadian market, don't necessarily want to have bricks and mortar in Canada. So we're getting a lot more demand for our warehousing distribution fulfillment services so that they can touch Canadian population. But definitely nearshoring is just a change. Our industry is changing right now, and it's exciting times. So I'm looking forward to where the journey goes.
Yeah, and there's a lot more conversation at the government level around supply chain, especially in the U.S. We're seeing a little bit of it in Canada, but mostly in the U.S., and talking about how critical infrastructure is needed to be able to manufacture certain products so that we don't have to lean on, you know, across the pond, so to speak, or long transit times or potential in delays with ocean freight and things like that. And so I think you're right. I think we're going to see a lot more focus on transborder within that sort of NAFTA. I know they don't call it that anymore, but that's I grew up with NAFTA.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm going to keep it as NAFTA, but really manufacturing between those three regions so that we can move it cross-border a lot easier and keep a lot of the manufacturing closer to home.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that, but traditional trade has always been east-west, west-east, however you want to look at it. Now, supply chains are now focused on infrastructure going north-south between, the three countries, Mexico, Canada, and the United States, the railroads, both CN and CP have affiliations with obviously their American counterparts, but also Mexican railroads as well. And it's interesting how this infrastructure is changing.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think it's really important, right? As we take a look at our supply chains, as we figure out where we want some of that manufacturing to be. And what does it mean not only to our supply chains, but also to our customers getting that product a lot sooner than maybe later. But with that comes, you know, increasing complexity, right? Customs, rules, regulations, compliance. It's a little bit of a minefield if you don't know what you're doing. So talk to us about your cross-border services and how do you help your customers navigate sort of that minefield, some of the challenges that we're talking about?
We have, that's a great question there. I would say this, we have, because our bread and butter has been strictly cross-border business, we knew long ago that we had to make sure we had solid relations with US and Canada customs. Mm-hmm. And we do, we're very fortunate that we've invested the time to make sure that, you know, you pick up the phone and you're on the phone with a Customs and Border Protection superintendent, asking the right questions, security through CPPAT and Partners in Protection is a very important aspect of the supply chain cross-border cycle that not a lot of people think about. So when customers come to me, whether it's a new customer or existing customer, I am always trying to preach to them. Maybe I preach too much to them that, you know, have a, you know, work with a custom broker that also enjoys similar relations. And you may think, well, they all have to have good relations. Well, yes, they should, and they don't necessarily. And you know, you could have maybe a small boutique custom broker that you think, okay, they don't offer me the scalability, but you know what they do? They actually offer great relations with, again, Customs and Border Protection, CBSA, but other government agencies as well. And that goes a long way to, listen, you want your goods to cross the border quickly without delay. Mm-hmm. I can speak to clients that don't have good relations that ultimately sometimes their product may get held up at customs. Important, you know, good relations are key. Digitization, the customs flow is also very important in so much as, again, the quicker you get your information to these eight other government agencies, again, minimizes potential delays.
Yeah, absolutely. And you want to know that it's being classified properly as well. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, other challenges that can come with this. If it's not being classified properly, you could get huge fines and duties later on, you know, so you have to be very careful who you're working with. And not only delays for the customers at the border, but also delays for you and your truckers. And that is a domino effect to other customers that you want to turn that truck around for. And so a lot of things to think about that maybe not a lot of people necessarily take into account when we think about choosing the right partner and working with the right trucking company, working with the right customs broker, because it can be a real domino effect. Now, I want to talk about your supply chain solutions, because I think one of the fastest growing conversations in the industry right now is around supply chain design. Right? Being proactive and creating supply chains that really work. So how are you helping to create those efficiencies, maybe reduce cost, and move beyond the we've always done it that way before approach to execute and manage better solutions?
Yeah, you know, the kind of we've always done it that way is a thing, right?
I've heard it in our history.
Yeah. and you know, it truly increased costs for carriers. So again, I would say this is that going back to being a good servant to our clients and having our team be great servants to our clients, we're always trying to be good stewards to the industry. Okay. So a couple of different things in the sense, you know, that if you can offer some predictability about when you're shipping, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Certain days, that helps us plan better. That helps us communicate to the client better. With respect to quicker transits, lower costs. We have clients that we have a variety of clients. We have a lot of clients being in the LTL space. We have clients that they're in manufacturing and sometimes they don't want to have their cargo shipped piecemeal across the border. They want to have some certainty when to expect their goods. We'll run a consolidation program where we'll run freight from various points of the United States to a central location, central terminal, Chicago, New Jersey, and then ship it up on a truckload. Not all clients want that, but some do because they want the certainty of when they can expect their goods. Again, everyone, the Amazon effect, everyone wants to know where their product is at one time, when to expect it. Right. I ordered a pizza last night. Same thing. I wonder when my pizza is there. Right. I knew to the exact minute when it was going to be there. Again, it's listening to the clients, having good, honest, frank conversations. I think most clients would like nice conversations that are straightforward and transparent. I would say in the past, we've always done it this way. Some shippers had bad shipping habits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're shipping out, we've seen it, right? You know, a shipper will ship to the same location 3 days out of five. Well, they could have saved themselves some money mm-hmm. by maybe consolidating and having a bit more predictability. Let's ship everything out on the Wednesday.
Yeah.
So there are various elements we talk to our clients about.
Well, and I think communication is key. I think when we think about supply chain design in 2024, one of the key elements of that is resiliency, right? Being able to be resilient, thinking in a different way. And I think one of the things that you're talking about is communication, right? Making sure that that line of communication between you and the service provider that you've decided to work with yeah. can really make a difference, right? Because like you said, if you know that they're going to ship out of one location Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you might have a consult truck on the Wednesday and can totally save them time, energy, and money, you know, those are the types of things that if we know as partners, we can solve and make better for each other.
Agreed. I also find that, you know, having the, you know, as I mentioned before, we have our own 3PL, we have our own warehouse and distribution fulfillment. When we offer those packages as one Polaris, mm-hmm. it creates a lot of value for our clients mm-hmm. in so much as, again, it's kind of one-stop shopping. They have that, again, the Amazon effect. Where is my cargo at all times? They can see it. If it's in the warehouse, if it's on a purchase-powered asset, if it's on a Polaris asset, they can see it and they like that.
Well, and you keep using the Amazon effect, and I use that too, but I almost feel like it should be the Amazon mindset. Like, I think they've like yes. totally Jedi-minded us.
Yes.
That's what we should be expecting from our service providers.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about a case study? This is one of my favorite parts of the episode. Can you bring one to life for us? Share an example of how you've helped a client. What was their challenge? Which solution did they utilize? And what was the ROI and benefit for them?
Yeah, I think you just, again, touching upon, maybe I should have saved this answer for the last question. But again, it was just, we have some clients, again, that don't want their cargo arriving piecemeal. They want predictability of when it's going to arrive at their facilities. So the consolidation, you know, again, consolidating at a terminal in the United States, you know, kind of minimizes costs getting it to that, you know, it's kind of a domestic freight movement and able to ship on a, say, a full truckload into the Canadian facility. Again, it adds certainty. There's a visibility aspect, and, you know, the plant can understand and kind of plan around when the cargo is going to arrive versus a piecemeal option.
Yeah. So consolidating not only for your cargo that's happening maybe once a week, but also putting it into a full truckload with some other cargo, which will also save some money because it's a full truckload.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, if a client has, you know, 40 orders arriving over five different days to their facility, or they have 40 orders arriving on one truckload, it's easier to manage their inventory. And again, back to planning, they can plan their business more efficiently.
Yes. And planning is so important, right? We found in the pandemic that planning and forecasting was a little bit difficult. And now we're trying to get back on track as to how to forecast and how to plan. And this really comes into that planning aspect for a lot of supply chain professionals. How are you planning your products being moved across the border? Because that makes a huge difference in cost and time to your end consumer as well. So you mentioned earlier that you have embarked on a digital transformation journey, which a lot of organizations are doing, although with a varying degree of success. But your digital growth is a key part of how you've evolved and scaled so successfully over the last 30 years. So talk to us about that transformation journey. What does it mean for Polaris and your customers, and how have you succeeded where others may have failed?
We have, it's interesting. As Polaris grew over the years, we were very transactional. And as we enjoyed various degrees of success, we would grow, and then I would add headcount. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but this is a real life story. In 2016, I walked into operations and I knew we were busy. This is fantastic. And I walked into operations and I saw people working, but their heads were buried in the computers. Everyone was working hard. And I said to myself, I would hate my job if I had to come in and just do what they were doing all day. It was transactional. And I said, you know, as we keep growing, am I going to keep adding this headcount? It didn't work. The reality is we're a Canadian company. The bulk of our work is done in the United States. My customers are American. My partners are American. My competitors are American. And I didn't know how to scale my business. It didn't make any sense to keep adding headcount where people probably aren't going to enjoy their jobs because it's so manual tech. So I remember sitting with our advisory board and I said, you know, what technologies are out there? And I went down a rabbit hole with my chief technology officer, and I discovered robotic processing automation and with some AI built in. And I would say 2016, 2017, we put the time into doing the research. We bought our robotics program in probably 2018. So just to put this into perspective, if we're moving 300,000 orders across the border each year, which we do, I would have to have just an enormous headcount in people. And instead of investing millions of dollars in the headcount, I invested a significant amount of money in the automation. So now every document that comes with each shipment, and there's seldom one, there's, you know, 5, 10, 50, is handled by robotic processing. And it's been that way for 5-6 years now. It's completely changed how we run our business. I now have people. I freed up human capacity. People like to think. So now we've unlocked their creative ability to have a better job. The heavy lifting is done by robotics. Our SIST RPAs will ingest the documents, send it out to the custom brokers, interact with the custom brokers, and then we'll have exception management. Straight through processing happens for probably 90% of our business. 10% goes to smart people who can handle the exceptions. So we've been able to scale our business I said back in 2018, I said we need to have these because we are competing in the U.S. landscape with 350 million versus 35, 40 million in Canada. All aspects of Polaris business need to be digitized. Mm-hmm. So creating our digital factory is the goal is to digitize our warehousing distribution, our 3PL, Polaris, our LTL division. But beyond that, it's also dealing with our customers. Mm-hmm. Again, we want to have that seamless transfer of information between our clients and Polaris. Mm-hmm. And so we do a lot with our clients with respect to API connections. And again, we're a digital trucking company, essentially. Mm-hmm. In doing so, it's scaled our business. I'm more efficient and I can compete in the U.S. landscape.
Amazing. And you're only in the middle of that journey right now, because it sounds like you are, you know, continuing down that transformational journey and continuing to add different ways to be able to automate processes. And this is something that I talk to a lot of people all the time. It's not a destination. This is a journey. This is a journey. Like, new technologies are going to come out, you know, and you want to be able to automate different processes, and different processes are going to come out as well. And so you started with RPA and AI probably before most people in 2017.
I would say this, that I think that, again, I've always prided myself in this company being progressive. I think some business owners, I think initially, I don't think they felt comfortable investing. I think people feel comfortable investing in trucks.
Because they can see it.
They
it's
can
tangible.
See it. Trucks, trailers, buildings. Mm-hmm. That makes sense to them, because this is the world that this, again, this is what they're comfortable with and what they know. To me, I wasn't trying to be smarter than anyone else. I just knew the success of my business needed to be, I need to scale it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of business owners just didn't see the need, or they couldn't rationalize the need, I suppose. So again, we're only halfway through. A lot of our times are spent with clients that are clients and our partners that want to talk to us about, okay, things that we've done and how do we help them? You know, that the value prop in those conversations is immense, because again, what does it do? It creates a stickier relationship. Mm-hmm. So now we've gone from, yes, you trust us moving your cargo. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. We're having stickier relations because we're helping them shape their supply chain.
Amazing.
In somewhat influencing to a little degree.
Yeah. But you were ahead of the curve. A lot of them are looking at it right now going, uh-oh, I should have done this when David did this, you know, back in 2017, and taking a look at what was out there, and then implementation in 2018, and they'd be so far ahead.
Yeah. You know, and I think that when you look at it, I think you said it right, is that it's a lot. When you look at it, you can't digest it all, but you have to have, you got to figure out, target what makes most sense for your business. And that could be what makes sense for Polaris may not make sense for another business.
Yeah.
But tackle it, digest it, and then it's a snowball effect. You get a little momentum. You get a little momentum. Keep going.
Absolutely. Now, last year, you launched the Larry Cox Academy to accelerate your team's professional development. Yeah. It sounds incredible. I mean, so many companies say they're committed to their workforce, but you're really putting your money where your mouth is. Can you talk to us about the Academy and what impact it's going to have for your team, but also your clients, maybe the supply chain community?
Yeah. You know, this is interesting conversation as well. I had, again, for years, we were transactional and we were just, it was fast pace. And over the years, we've had so many great people come through the doors of Polaris. And I'm very thankful that the good people we've had have worked here in 30 years. But at no time, when we weren't as mature and, you know, the 20 year anniversary, I wasn't as mature as I am at the 30 year anniversary. I never was able to take the time to ask our Polaris people, what do you want to do in life? Typically, we have great people, right? We also have some younger people that mm-hmm. were instrumental in our growth. And typically, they'd come out of university or college, would work for us for a handful of years and move on. And I was always sad to see them leave. And I knew, you know what? I need to ask, what do they want to do? Mm-hmm. And a couple years ago, I had a great, bright employee. And she said, Dave, I've been here for 3-4 years. Thank you for everything you've done for me. And she was moving on to her next steps in her career. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I need to do more, right? And I said, what if I could offer you an opportunity where you could understand different aspects of supply chain from a digital perspective, from a rating perspective, the sales perspective, the warehousing? She says, oh, that would be fantastic. So the goal to create the Larry Cox Academy was to offer high-performing people at Polaris the opportunity to grow their career, hoping that they stay with Polaris. But I'm also not foolish enough to know that I can't guarantee that. Mm-hmm. What's equally important to me is that when people leave Polaris, that they feel like, hey, these guys treated me the right way. I learned a lot when I was there. They go out there and share that with their friends, new business colleagues. And again, it comes back to, Polaris is seen in a favorable light. But it's also an element of Polaris helping an individual develop their careers. There's nothing more important to me than seeing people succeed. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't candy coat anything. I am so excited when I see people go on either at Polaris, mm-hmm. right, or outside our industry. There's numerous people that have worked at Polaris that are still friends of Polaris. And that in itself is a great way to get business. But again, mm-hmm. again, trying to be a good steward in the industry, creating opportunity for people to grow their careers was kind of the impetus behind it.
Amazing. And I can feel your passion behind it when you speak about it, right? It's something that you really wanted to stick behind and you really want to help nurture people within this industry. A lot of times we talk about, well, what's the next generation in supply chain? What does that look like? How do we get them excited about the different opportunities, the different options for them as a career in supply chain? And you just talked about one way that we can do that. If they can start with a company like Polaris and get a better understanding of where they can go in their career, whether they stay there or not, and understand that this is an industry for them, we're going to keep all sorts of amazing talent in this industry. So kudos for you. I like that.
Thank you. Thank you. I think let me add one last point. I think our industry in Canada I don't think we've promoted our industry enough to say, hey, supply chain transportation is a great industry. And again, just trying to attract people. Right. Also, the Larry Cox Academy, it helps me attract talent, because when people read about this to come in, that's right. Great. Again, it helps me retain talent. But again, trying to develop people's careers is I am passionate about.
Amazing. I love that. So last but not least, let's talk about what's next. I mean, you're all about making life easier for the supply chain community, the transportation community. Are there any new solutions or innovations we should be looking out for? And maybe, what do you think is going to happen for the rest of 2024?
There's a couple things about this. I will say cross-border business is picking up right now, which is nice. 2023 was obviously a little flatter than we'd like to see. Yep. But we're seeing a bit more steam cross-border, which is fantastic. But what I would like to talk about is, where are we going? What are we seeing here? Sustainability is truly, it's important to me, but I would say this, it's going to be important to the supply chain community. It's no longer, we're having clients where, in the past it might be, oh, you're a great ESG steward. You do this. That's nice. Now there's an expectation, and that expectation will grow. Where clients, it's not about service and rates. It always is, I guess, right? But more to it. What are you doing with respect to ESG?
Right.
And I've been in a few conferences with reputable manufacturers and shippers, and I ask these questions. And they say, Dave, you know what? It's now our organizations, there's an expectation we're going to work with people that value environment, social, governance aspect of ESG. So again, it's not a nice have, it's now a must. And we've partnered with the University of Guelph, the Lang School of Business, and Dr. Audrey Jamal. I went to her, quite frankly, a year and a half ago. I said, I know I need to do more. Morally, I want to do more, but my business needs to do more. And for the last year and a half, we've been working with the University of Guelph and kind of crafting out the Polaris ESG playbook.
Okay.
We're in our infant stages, I would say. But to me, it's important, right? We need to do more. Again, the moral aspect, being a good steward of the community, but clients expect it.
Yeah.
And I would like to be at the front of the bus, then at the back of the bus. So ESG is important right now to our industry and Polaris.
Yeah. And it seems to me that that's how you're thinking. You're always thinking forward or ahead of the industry and where you want to be and how you want to be out front so that you can also help others who are coming up behind you. So from humble beginnings with only 3 employees and nothing more than the drive to succeed, Polaris is now one of the largest privately held Canadian LTL carriers with 4 operating divisions. Dedicated to improving the transportation industry and the customer experiences within it, Polaris is an award-winning single-source supply chain provider that you can trust to bring industry-leading transit times, cutting-edge technology, and a collaborative spirit together for your success. Did you have a guess at today's big question? Well, at the top of the show, I asked you, today's guest ships between Canada and the U.S., but how long is the Toronto to Los Angeles lane? Well, it stretches for a long 2,200 miles. But despite that vast distance, Polaris routinely transports freight between these locations in as little as 2 days. So they're a transportation brand that you need to have in your network. If you want to find out more, you can check them out at PolarisTransport.com. And a huge thanks to Dave for joining me today and the team at Polaris for making this episode happen. Dave, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
Did you know that the average cost of losing an hourly supply chain worker has reached $19,607? And that recent research shows that 77% of hourly supply chain workers are considering a job change in the next 3 months. This could have a huge impact on your productivity, bottom line, and culture. Workstep is helping supply chain companies to better engage their distributed hourly workforce at scale. Understand the true reasons behind their workforce turnover and take actions to make positive changes and reduce attrition. Workstep has successfully helped many companies reduce their frontline worker turnover by up to 36%. Visit workstep.com to learn more. If you would like to hear more from us, we have plenty more content for you featuring the best and the brightest in the industry. Head over to letstalksupplychain.com to check out the latest. And if you have a supply chain challenge, we have most likely had them on the show. So head over there, head over to the website, put your keyword into the search bar, and all of that content will come up and you'll be able to listen and learn about who is on the market. And remember to come back next week when I'll be putting the spotlight onto one of our brand new live shows, Relex Talks. Host Sarah Godet will be joined by 2 special guests to dive into the state of supply chain in 2024. They're going to be exploring partner collaboration, the barriers to improving efficiency, and a new trend that we have TikTok to thank for. Surge buying. And if you're fed up of reading too many gloomy supply chain headlines, you're going to want to tune in because I think Sarah and her guests finally have some good news to share. So don't miss that one. If you like our show and you'd like to support us, you can follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. We're also over on TikTok. You can subscribe to our newsletter over at letstalksupplychain.com and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Let's Talk Supply Chain. You can also find some really cool merch for the supply chainer in your life. We've got hashtag supply chain issues, hashtag ship happens t-shirts. Go and check out the merch that we have at letstalksupplychain.com. And if you're looking for the right community where you can network, you can learn find exclusive content, find exclusive virtual monthly meetups, head over to the Secret Society of SupplyChain.com website, and you'll be able to find our membership groups. And we have three of them. And we've done that on purpose because we want to give a safe space for everybody to come together in supply chain. So head over to the Secret Society of SupplyChain.com and find out which community is right for you. And if you'd like to be featured on an upcoming episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the show.
Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for listening. And remember, ship happens.